And welcome once again to EWTN's Bookmark. I'm Doug Keck, your host, our guest author today, new to the show, Christopher McMahon. His book, Faithful Finances, Six Steps to Establishing a Catholic Financial Life, published by our friends at Sophia Press. And of course, it's great to meet you, and people will have seen you with the one and only Father Mitch talking about this same topic. And I'm assuming the reason you wrote about faithful finances is because you have a financial background, right?
Yeah. And for about 40 years, I've been in the financial services business. We have a firm, a secular wealth management firm we had for decades. And after quite a while, we actually opened a second faith-aligned investment firm, Aquinas Wealth Advisors. Our goal is to help people align their financial lives and their faith lives. We always used to say in the old days, you didn't have to worry about it because there was an inherent Judeo-Christian ethic in the world. And as we saw that kind of torn away, for us, nowhere was it more present than in investments where people lost their minds. And we said, we got to bring some sanity
because
back to this thing.
They didn't realize what they were investing in or what the money was being put towards.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think, first of all, companies started to say, instead of just making profits and giving people dividends, what we're going to do is we're going to try to set social doctrine. We're going to be politically active and not with our
that's
own money.
That's the ESG stuff you talk about in the book. Right?
And the crazy misguided, I think it's compassion, but it's misguided.
Right.
And where we landed was
as
companies.
As Mother always said.
Amen. But people are saying things and doing things and supporting things as Catholics we can't support. And the great news is with many efforts, hopefully our book and our companies, other folks are doing, we're going to get it back.
Do you find it's difficult sometimes dealing with Catholics in the world we have today where many times people think the love of money is, they think money is evil as opposed to the love of money. People say, well, you shouldn't be spending a lot of time thinking about that. You really got to be thinking about helping the poor and not building up so much wealth in this world. You're thinking of the next world. Convincing people that this is a Catholic thing to do.
I think there is some of that out there. There's some pushback against that. But I would say the most engaged philanthropy I've ever seen that's moving our church forward and doing more good is from Catholic people that have done prudent planning and have been able to really make philanthropy an ongoing thing and generationally teaching it. So I think the future is very bright and very critical for Catholics.
Right. In the beginning, an introduction here, I thought it was interesting. You have a quote from Sheen. You say, first we overlook evil. This is Sheen. Then we permit evil. Then we legalize evil. Then we promote evil. Then we celebrate evil. Then we persecute those who still call it evil. And that's exactly where we are now. And
absolutely.
This was what Sheen said 50 years ago.
What a visionary. It's right. So true.
Why did you put that at the very beginning?
Because I think what's happened is evil. We have been, as Catholics, we were trying to be polite at first. We thought, never discuss politics, never discuss religion. And as business people, I can't tell you the financial services industry is riddled with misguided Catholics because they've been taught by their firms, look, don't say anything, just go along with it, and we'll all be fine because it's separate. Well, again,
to leave your faith at home.
Leave your faith at home. Don't ever mention it, which I couldn't think of in today's world. What is more important than to bring it into your office with you, make it a critical centerpiece of your life?
Well, what drives this, as you refer to it, as woke corporate activism, and do you think it's waning?
Good news, yeah, there's been a little turn. About 2 years ago, I was in New York doing a debate between ESG investing and faith-aligned investing.
And what is ESG?
Environment, social, and governance, right?
Right.
So it's all good ideas. Let's treat people fairly.
That came right out of China, didn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
At least credits related to it, right?
I think it's right, because what's ended up happening is we have whole organizations. There's this whole system, the ESG machine, which has fundamentally become an anti-Catholic machine, but you're hitting on it right. I think we're seeing light at the end of the tunnel. Mm-hmm. We're seeing at least there's a voice now. There's a wave of Catholicism, a wave of saying, wait a second, we have to tolerate this. And at the very least tolerate it, and that puts us in a good position to take this thing
back.
We
talk about a commitment to universal truth, sanctity of life, dignity of the individual, and the intrinsic value of every human being.
Yes, sir.
That's what should be important to us. How do you help people do that in their investing?
I think a couple things we do. There's so many individual Catholic organizations that have no idea what they're supporting in their investments. And that was very difficult to tell. You had to take our words for it. The guy showed up in the pinstripe suits, you had to believe them, and they said, don't worry, you're faith aligned. And they would say, well, my advisor goes to church, so I think he must be right. Not realizing the advisor had no access to the information. Mm-hmm. The great news is with the advent of technology, we've been able to pull back the curtain and see it. And what we have to do is say to people, excuse me, company, you're giving money. You're a tool and die company. Why are you giving huge donations to Planned Parenthood, which is completely in contrast to what we do? And if we push back hard enough, because what happened was we weren't loud enough. Mm-hmm. The people on the left were advocating for this stuff, and all of a sudden.
So they did it to keep they didn't want to be canceled, they want to be protested against, they wanted
exactly.
go away.
And they got no noise from us, so right. they got praise on this side and no noise from us. Now we're saying that's not right. We're writing them and saying, hey, stop doing this. And I think what's going to happen, we'll pull them back to neutral. Because it's not bad enough that the CEOs will be using their own money. They're using our dollars that should be returned to us in the form of dividends.
Right.
So it's outrageous.
Right, exactly. And you talk about the matter becomes even more pointed when considering the alignment of external activism with internal practices. You say this brings us to the crux of the matter, the essential alignment of faith and finances as stewards of God's creation and the idea that they need to be congruent with Catholic teachings. Now, we hear about God's creation. How does that fit into Catholic finance? Does that just mean that they have to be environmentally friendly? And sometimes the environmentally friendly groups
yes.
have a lot of other agendas.
Absolutely right.
Including population control.
Exactly. It can be a mess if we're careful. Mm-hmm. I think we boil it down to really three things. We really want to protect the sanctity of human life, particularly those most vulnerable in the womb, number one. I think we are very concerned about pornography because it's everywhere, right?
It's ubiquitous.
Exactly. Yeah, right. And the reality is, why would we want to be in those businesses? I remember reading a letter from a CEO not long ago that said, shareholders, great news. We now have this great platform for content creators to safely, you know, communicate their wonderful ideas. They would have been humiliated to do that 20 years ago. We need to get back to that place and
right.
say, this is bananas, because what degrades the person, right?
Well, absolutely. Listen, I've taken off my resume, but I worked on the startup of the Playboy Channel, and I can attest to watching us have to make it harder and harder and harder to build the interest to the kind of stuff you see today.
Yes.
And not only that, but the impact it had even on the people working on it, how it basically degraded their view of women, ultimately.
Isn't that amazing? It's so yeah. accurate, too, because
right.
it lowers the bar for all of us. It's unbelievable.
Right. This is interesting, because this is where we get into, in a world increasingly driven by capitalistic objectives. Now, is that good or bad? This can be challenging. However, the emergence of woke corporate activism can be seen as an opportunity, not just a challenge. How is it an opportunity?
I think
us?
It's because it allows us to discuss it like we've never been able to discuss it before. When guys like us talk about it, we become outraged. This is absurd.
Right.
Why would how on earth could we be giving money and having it used in this fashion? And really, a lot of people in the world, but Catholics are very connected, and they're very influential. And at the same time, they're being completely minimized, disregarded,
mm-hmm.
and put off in a corner. That won't last.
Well, I think it upsets a lot of Catholics and stuff too. Is when they hear about institutions recently, there's some issues at Notre Dame with who they decided to pick,
yes.
Or other Catholic institutions where we find out later that some of the groups they were involved with don't seem to align congruently with Catholic teaching, and they say, well, if they can't do this, what can I do?
That's the hope of the book. We're trying to say to people, look, we may be a million miles away from it today, but if over 180 days we take these six steps, we will be closer to it by the end of those 6 months and feel good about it. And at least have the reason mm-hmm. I think it seems so daunting to folks, they don't want to try, right? And we're saying, how do you eat an elephant? You know, one bite at a time. Let's
right.
go and let's get after it and let's take these six steps. And it's like Exodus 90. I'm involved in Exodus 90 right now.
Okay.
I haven't had a cookie in 2 months. It's really hard on me.
Okay.
And I think every day we build brick by brick, we can build that wall up. And over time, we can say, wait a second.
So what do you eat, manna? Is that what
works? No. Pita bread. I'm a Lebanese guy.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Now, we talk about the idea of the six steps to aligning faith and finance. Let's
yes,
just
sir.
Go through them and give
sure.
people an overview. The number one is create a family mission, I guess kind of a mission statement thing, right?
Absolutely, because I can't tell you, we've been, my firm and myself, been in the financial services business for decades, and people will say, what's important to you? And they'll say, you know, we never discussed that. Can you imagine that?
Mm-hmm.
So just sitting down on the blank sheet of paper and saying, let's get the family in here, what is important to all of us, and ultimately let's have a family mission statement, which is critically important. Here's what we believe, and here's the values we're going to try to support.
Yeah, and you talk about things to be concerned about or check out, anti-Catholic ideology, we kind of get that. But let me drop down to one another.
Sure.
Greenwashing. What's greenwashing?
That's when it's when they fake, they hide the money on us, right? That's exactly
okay.
what happens. It was like when the guys in the golf tour, the LIV tour said, look, we're killing, you know, we're doing terrible things to women, right? We're mutilating people and so forth. Yet at the same time, we're going to pay the best golfers in the world to come over here in Dubai and play golf, right? So that's really the issue. We have to be careful of this kind of tidal wave of corporate heft. You know, the problem is the corporations have gotten so big. right? The S&P 500, those top 20 companies are so big, they have so much money. They can create their own, you know, their entire communication system can overwhelm us. Mm. I think that's also one valuable thing about the internet. There's a lot of bad things about the internet,
right,
of course.
Right. Well, that's just the way it works with God, right? Everything can be used for good or bad. It's really
right.
what you want to do with it, it turns it into. But you also talk about here the profit motive, and that's one that, are we allowed to have a profit motive? Or are we supposed to be thinking about making money?
I think architecture
or being
is
fair to everybody else.
Great question. I don't think you can be fair to everybody else unless you have a profit motive.
Okay.
You have to really be driven by the idea of using God's gift best, right? Putting people in the right seats. Mm. That whole idea of hiring people just for the sake of checking that box, hiring the wrong person, making the organization less efficient, hurting the overall organization in the name, again, of misguided compassion. Mm. Ultimately, what's the best place is for that person to be in the right seat, wherever that is, maybe not with us, but we can make profits and ultimately we can fund those things which are most critical. And who does a better job of charity than the Catholic Church? I don't think anybody does. It's been I would say, and that comes from us prudently making our money, saving our money, and ultimately giving our money away.
Yeah, there has been some concern expressed about certain Catholic charitable organizations and kind of the, I think what people were the most surprised about with that was the amount of money that the organization gets from a government and the concern that the government's rules for that impact the Catholicity of the organization.
That's a huge concern, and we always talk about that and really do some vetting on these organizations. The good news is there's more choices today than there used to be. Catholic Charities in some ways is a wonderful organization, but there's some of that stuff going on in there, so you have to be careful. But we have noticed something which we like very much, Doug. We're telling people to make very specific grants if they go to those organizations, say, you can use my money for this specific thing.
Right. Okay.
And when you do that, when it's an endowment that is controlled, they have no choice but to act on that.
Now I have a quote here from Kevin Roberts, the Heritage Foundation. We can be morally upright stewards of nature, what God has given us, while realizing that ESG actually gets in the way of human flourishing. How does it get in the way of human flourishing?
I think it goes back to that same point. ESG is misguided, and what it ends up happening is putting the wrong person in the wrong seat for the basis. That ESG is a cottage industry. The cottage industry is not even true. It's a huge industry. Making up designations, going to conferences, having direct reports to chairmen of companies. Had you seen a few years ago, many of the major companies were having their annual report, and then an ESG report. You read the ESG report and go, what is this? This has nothing to do with making money. This has nothing to do with a better company. This has nothing to do with having made better employees. So I think what happens is we got so tied up and misguided that I guess in a world where some people have a difficulty saying what a man is, what a woman is, it's
right,
the same
kind of
thing.
Right, and you talk about that in the book, too. You say life is a gift from God, therefore the sex assigned by God is also a gift. Attempts to surgically alter that gift or a rejection of God and affront to him. Now, thank goodness, what we're seeing is finally the capitalism's working because the lawsuits are coming
yes.
in, and suddenly money is, and the insurance companies are going to say, we're not doing this anymore, and suddenly the AMA and these other organizations start saying, well, maybe not such a great idea, at least for anybody who's not a quote-unquote adult.
And I think it's uplifting because many people thought the boat is, you know, the ship has sailed, we're down a path where we'll never get back, and the reality is they're dismantling some of this. It shows us how great our system is, as you said, so actually. It ultimately works, and in spite of the pain we're in right now, and I think we're still in it, we're moving it forward.
Well, we have this kind of, you say, under the guise of inclusivity, we are constantly told we must accept whatever gender identity, et cetera, like that. But then you have the great quote in here that seems to get lost. It would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were cast in the sea than that he should cause one of these little ones to sin, from Luke. I think we should hear that more often.
Absolutely.
When some of these things going on and we're being told how we need to be overly sympathetic to everything, or as if tolerance is the number one virtue.
Yes, yes. And what do we end up with, right? We end up with this kind of mess that we're in right now. But again, I think we're starting to win the battle.
Right, exactly. You also talk about all the other things, witnessing, influence, personal fulfillment. I guess that would tie it into the fact that you're also on a mission statement to kind of fix into what your family wants to accomplish or what's like to see what good is, whether that's helping the poor or something else.
Yeah, I think you were talking about it earlier when those people worked in that dark industry, they themselves became dark. When a family comes together and says, this is what's important to us, that family's a better family.
Mm-hmm.
What does matter? And people say, what did mom and dad think about? What did granddad and grandma think about? And all of a sudden, we are people that
believe
this.
Well, I'd like to
think,
what would they think about this now if you ask them on a particular situation?
Sure.
And a lot of people don't want to go there. You also talk about divine accountability, aligning investments with our beliefs, as we say, is a way to prepare for this accountability. And also, you actually use these phrases, sin and repentance, about the fact that The concept of financial sin and importance of repentance and reconciliation to Catholics, not just about making money, but also about how we earn, manage, and use our money. So there's three components there.
Absolutely. Right? And I think we have a responsibility too. And I think also some people are well-meaning people out there that think they're doing the right thing, mm-hmm. kind of down the path of this ideology, to the degree we can help them shine a light on it, bring them back into concert with the church is helpful too. So there's an evangelization element to this too, because you're right, the faith isn't, tolerance.
Right.
The faith is what Christ taught us.
So what, step two is take an inventory of your life. How do you do that?
The physical inventory is pretty easy. People have even looked at that stuff. Mm-hmm. What do we have? What do we have through work? What do we have here? Well, sometimes they don't want to do a retirement plan because they're afraid of what they're going to see. Right? But they're afraid they don't want an education plan because they're afraid they don't have enough assets saved, whatever it is. But the only, we have to start, that first step is so critical, and we have to say there's two inventories, right? Where are we in terms of our physical mm-hmm. stuff that we have? And secondly, where are we in terms of what have we done so far? Are we living a life? And that's shining a mirror on us. Mm-hmm. Are we living a life right now that we're proud of? Or if not, what steps can we take to live that life?
Are we living within our means, even?
Very important, because, and as money, as you said earlier, is money the God.
Right.
It's not. It means it's just a gift from God. It's a means to an end. Mm-hmm. But what is driving us right now? Is it stuff? I talked to a great priest who said he's the 12th or 15th guy hired at Microsoft. Father Corwin, you guys have talked to him.
Okay,
yeah.
Right.
And his book sold 700,000 copies. So I'm hopeful for my book for 700,000 copies.
Okay.
But what turned him after, he was an internet phenom, right? He was at Microsoft, one of the first guys. He went to his lawyer's office and he looked on the credenza, and his patent attorney, which are those usually pretty intellectual guys in San Francisco in the 90s, had a crucifix on his credenza. Mm-hmm. And he said, "What is that?" That led him to convert to Catholicism.
You never know.
Him ultimately to be, he became a Dominican.
Right. Holy reminders, as Mother would say.
Amen.
That's what you got to have, holy reminders. Now, I notice in the inventory of life, you got a balance sheet in here. I could see people going, "Oh, my Lord, do I have to go to the Wharton Business School to fill this out?"
What we're trying to do is a couple things. First of all, technology is great. There's tools that people can use online where they simply, and people are getting so comfortable with this, they can connect their accounts, link their accounts, and they'll get automatic reports and budgeting. If not, we'll go through the old school where we'll put a pen to paper. Mm-hmm. But I would say now if we're linked to our banks, and especially if folks are using credit and debit cards, it's a pretty easy process.
A lot of them have budgeting programs you can even use. So you could use something like
that.
Exactly.
And then also some of those other, which are pretty cool, mm-hmm. some of those other ones that are out there just now, you can sign up for $25 a month. It'll show you every dollar you're spending, so you'll realize you have 6 Hulu subscriptions,
that kind of thing.
Because
people
lose track of that as well. So it's all part of that budget.
They count on that.
Exactly.
That's why they signed you up for free.
That's why it's $19 a month, not like, you're right?
Suddenly it's like, what is this still here? Step number three, assess for economic faith and risk alignment. So I guess that's pretty straightforward. You want to make sure that your money's not being used in the wrong way or through the wrong investments.
Used to be impossible, now it's pretty easy. There's online tools we talk about in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Our company has a tool people can use for free where they can say, here's all my stuff, where am I falling short? Where am I inconsistent with what's important to me? Well, we've had churches, dioceses, organizations say, "Oh my goodness, we had no idea that we were giving thousands of dollars to Planned Parenthood unknowingly, or sponsoring pornography unknowingly." And now the great news is, again, there's some dark stuff to technology, but this is fabulous because it allows us now to pull it back. We talk a lot about that in the book.
You can see the transparency of what's going on.
Yes.
It's interesting because you talk about, and people are often afraid to analyze goals in comparison with their current strategy. The common response is a fear of failure, a fear born out of doubt. And that's what a lot of these things are changing, is that people just are afraid, well, I'm not sure I want to make the changes, or, now that I know what I need to do, I can't act like I don't know.
I went on weigh 180 pounds, but I don't want to really understand. I don't want to do an analysis of the calories I ate.
Right.
My grandfather always said, "I don't get life insurance because it's bad luck." And I thought, was his position, if you didn't own life insurance, then you wouldn't die?
Right.
I don't understand that. So it's the same kind of thing where we have to say, how do we, what steps we have to take to kind of, as painlessly as possible, shine a mirror on
it. We have to realize that we still live in a world,
Absolutely.
As George said in It's a Wonderful Life, well, money comes in rather handy down here, I understand.
Yeah, exactly.
He may not use it in heaven, but I found that it comes in handy down here. You talk about number four, implement the transition plan. You say, at this point, you've done much of the heavy lifting. So those first three are the biggest things you have to overcome.
The inventory's
so
tough.
So don't feel like, when you go through those things, that everything else is going to be just as hard.
Yeah, because now we're going to just set up a plan to implement it slowly and say, what are we going to do? It may be as simple as saying this, well, next year, a couple different things. These new Trump accounts have come out. So we say, let's get our children or grandchildren. That's free money from the government. If they're 3 years or younger, they'll get $1,000. Set that up. As we get pay increases, may come in January or in the middle of the year, let's take 2% of that pay increase and start funding the 401k a little bit more. So actually those steps can be much more manageable.
Right. You also talk about, as part of the implemented transition, is a 12-month financial reset. So the idea that these things don't change overnight.
Correct. We want to go December 1st to January 1st, excuse me, to December 31st. We can be in a completely different place and well on our way.
Who's complacent, Jim? And his worst Tuesday ever.
That's a guy that never looks at the facts, right? He never addresses it. He buries his head in the sand.
Okay.
And he spends too much money. And you know what he does with a little bit too? With the extra dollars he has, he does his hobbies. He boats, or buys a jet ski, or he buys. We met a million of those guys in our careers. He buys an RV. That is the worst possible investment in the history of the world. Rent one. Rent the most expensive one you can. That's what we want you to do. And then what happens is they spend up to capacity, and then God forbid they get laid off. There's a problem. They say, oh my goodness, now I have to completely reset.
Now I got to live in my RV.
Exactly.
Don't buy the river.
Exactly. Don't buy an RV. That's
you never know. And in that section also, you talk about the idea of disability insurance. And that seems to be something that people really need to take stock of, because we are living longer, but it doesn't mean we're always so healthy.
We're living longer, and a couple other things are happening. People are more self-employed. In the old days, they'd have it through their job, or they might make significant money in commissions and so forth, and as opposed to base salary. That disability that they provided through their employer may only be that base salary. But they might have half their income uncovered. And again, like complacent Jim, what happens is if those expenses are so high, a disability can be devastating to a financial plan.
Right, especially if you're thinking you're leaving stuff to your kids or something.
Correct.
This is we hear more and more about this. I know even EW10 and talks about it too, is for supporting EW10, donor advised funds. What is that?
Super important. It's wonderful. The old days, in order to give money away, it was a pain because you couldn't have a plan, because people come at you all the time. As you made more money, they'd come at you more often. So some people form family foundations. It's an entity, it has to file a tax return, it's complicated, you have to keep minutes, so nobody does it.
Right.
People that start them have the best intentions. After a while, they go, let's close this, I can't stand anymore. Donor advised funds, they made it easy for us. Anybody can set up an account, anybody can put money in it. The minute you put that money in there, it's given away, so you can't get it back. Then it sits in there, and as a family, we can get together and say, what's important to all of us? We have 20,000, 5,000, 500 we're gonna give away this year. Who are we gonna give it to?
Okay.
And it creates a business plan in a very easy way and a very inexpensive way. No tax returns for a donor advised fund. Everybody should have one. It's so interesting too. It's those people that are living closest to the line, that those youth ministers that have six children. They're the ones that have the donor advised fund so often. They're the ones because it's so they put giving at the top of their list. Mm-hmm. Which is amazing, which is beautiful, right?
Right. Exactly. It takes faith. Number five, key components of Catholic estate planning. You have a whole series in dealing with wills and trusts and things, the upsides and the downsides, the pitfalls to avoid. What's the biggest pitfall?
I think for Catholics, there's a couple. One's a huge one, is simply end of life choices, right? Mm-hmm. People they put in their wills. The lawyer said it's a standard document. Basically, you're signing off saying there's a million things. Please, end of life. Basically agreeing to euthanasia without knowing what you're agreeing to. That's the biggest thing. And I think beyond that, just where that money's going. And also, the firms that we're operating with, does the firm itself, that law firm that's helping us draft that legal document, that will, whatever it is, are they in alignment with us from a faith perspective? I don't think any longer that we can say, they handle all people's things. Because what we find is, in those organizations, they have a tendency to dismiss the values of faith-based people. Mm-hmm. And there's so many great faith-based advisors out there now in the legal space and tools out there that are available. I think it's critical that we align with those.
And support those people who are actually doing that.
100%.
In many cases, are foregoing other financial remuneration.
100%, absolutely.
Because they are that. And in step number six, finalize the plan and schedule periodic reviews. And you talk about emotional hesitance, fear and anxiety. Acknowledge fears and anxieties about financial planning. Make a written list of concerns and then examine them logically. I guess what you find with most of these things, when you write them down, you realize, are they really that big a deal? Or is the downside really that?
And you
likely
can knock them down. If you don't write them down, you don't know what you're up against. Mm-hmm. Exactly right. How do you know where you're going if you don't have a map? And it's when people write that stuff down, and especially when they start scratching them off, wow, what a feeling that is. And all of a sudden we realize we have progress. As long as we're drawing breath that day, we have an opportunity to get closer, which is wonderful.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think is the biggest concern for the average Catholic investor today in dealing with just, you know, regular funds in the stock market or buying an index fund? Or?
I think, well, index funds are going to be brutal, right, because they're going to have so many things we're inconsistent with. Mm-hmm. There are some good ones out there, and also it's funny, there's ones that actually have the name Catholic in them, and you do some screening on them, you'd say, I don't know, I'm not sure why that name's on there.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
false advertising, I think, right, would be a big thing. Or there are people that aren't keeping up with the technology and offering things or making offerings. But I think there's two big issues. For mm-hmm. for the working class folks, there's a real problem. Mm-hmm. There's two economies. Net worths have never been higher in our countries. The stock market has never been as at all-time highs. However, that's really benefited the top 35% mm-hmm. of the economy. So there's those people that are working class people where expenses have gone up significantly and they've not seen the same proportionate raise in income. So first of all, do I have enough money? And secondly, what am I chasing? Unfortunately, what's happening now is the American dream is different than it used to be. It used to be have a home, send our children to college, retire comfortably. Mm-hmm. Now somewhere in the middle of that is, you know, Hermes bags or whatever those, you know, the most expensive things.
Right.
We've gone off track a little bit, and I think being lured away, seduced, and I think that I think the evil one's involved in that.
Absolutely.
Seducing us.
Yeah, well, people are very happy mostly with what they have until they see somebody else who has something and then decide, all of a sudden, I'm not as happy as I was before because I don't have that car that they have. Well, nothing changed for you.
Exactly.
So why do you feel
exactly.
that way? So
exactly. Yours works and you
right,
like it
right.
and it's warm.
So you have to realize that where's that coming from? Okay, we're just out of time. Thanks
John,
so much.
Thank
I appreciate you.
Great being with you.
On our show, author Christopher McMahon, Faithful Finances, Six Steps to Establishing a Catholic Financial Life. Again, published by Sophia Press, naturally available through our EWTN Religious Catalog. I'm Doug Keck. We'll see you next time right here on Bookmark. Thanks.